Good day and welcome to Letters and Politics for Tuesday, January 18th, 2011. I'm Mitch Jezrich. Across the country, states in grappling with budget deficits are turning their attention to their own workforce and unions that represent state workers. Such proposals include freezing wages and cutting pension benefits of public employees to help balance budgets. At least 16 states are expected to consider legislation that would take away the right of unions to use payroll deductions for political purposes. And 10 other states may take up, quote, right-to-work bills that would prevent workers from being required to join or pay dues to a union. Republican Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker said eliminating bargaining rights for public sector workers is one option to help rein in costs and help control the state's budget gap. Republican Ohio Governor John Kasich suggests eliminating collective bargaining rights for thousands of health care workers. And in California, Democratic Governor Jerry Brown proposes large cuts to in-home supportive services, which would include fewer hours for many union workers and decrease state worker wages by 10% for workers who are not with unions who struck a deal previously with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. And at the federal level, President Obama, through executive order, has froze federal worker wages. Now joining me to talk about labor in the public sector today are two guests. Bill Fletcher is with the American Federation of Government Employees. He's also an editorial board member and columnist for Black Commentator. He is also author of the book Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and a New Path Towards Social Justice. Bill Fletcher, thank you so much for your time.
Glad to be on, Mitch.
And Mark Brenner, who is director of Labor Notes, a website that covers labor issues at labornotes.org. Mark Brenner, thank you for your time.
Great to be here, Mitch. Thanks.
Mark, can you begin by laying out sort of the struggle that public employees are looking at now and what unions such as AFL-CIO, Service Employees International Union, and others are trying to do about it?
Well, I mean, the scale of the budget gaps that we're facing is tremendous. I mean, since the recession started, $425 billion shortfall, you know, 46 states out of the country are facing big gaps, most in the double digits. So, you know, here in New York, for example, is a $10 billion gap. And so, you know, in California, it's I think $22 or $23 billion. So the logical solution, rather than actually raise the revenues, to cover those gaps that most of the people in state legislatures, across the country are coming up with is going after the people that work in the public sector. It's kind of an amazing bait and switch that we've seen where, you know, the people who actually, you know, got fat off the last 30 years and then who drove our economy off a cliff now sort of have disappeared from the public limelight. You know, Wall Street bankers, corporate CEOs, the people who've driven inequality in this country completely into the stratosphere aren't in the limelight, right? People like Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, are talking about the haves versus the have-nots. But what he means is the haves are the public sector workers who have, you know, reasonable wages and a pension and paid vacation, and the have-nots are supposed to be the taxpayers. But, you know, the people who actually are in the top 5%, top 1% of this economy disappear from the equation. So we're really in the public sector, I think, in a fight for our lives in terms of maintaining our standards, keeping you know, sort of the last few anchors of middle class security in place, both in terms of pensions, in terms of benefits, and frankly, you know, if the layoffs that people are envisioning go through, we're no doubt going to see unemployment official unemployment rate hit into the double digits. But I think what's really more important here is the political nature of the attack, which is I think we're going to spend a lot of time laying out. Is about you know, finalizing, if they can, the sort of restrictions on union power in the political arena. I mean, a lot of the changes that you mentioned from Republican governors across the state are all about reining in unions' power in the political process and trying to actually stifle a voice for working class Americans across the country. So I think that in many unions we're seeing the alarm bells start to get sounded. I think we're running far behind where we need to be. You know, we've had a long history of kind of keeping our heads down and hoping that our connections in state houses and in the Congress will sort of work to our benefit. But I think, you know, as I see sort of in my own backyard here in New York, Governor Cuomo has not only organized the people in the ruling classes, you know, the Wall Street folks and the real estate interests in New York City to put up $10 million to start attacking public sector unions. He's already pledged $4 million of his own out of his campaign coffers to come after us. So the fight's really on, and I think we have to consider this definitely as not a business-as-usual budget battle and really take our case to the folks,
Bill
the
Fletcher,
folks out there in the world.
Bill Fletcher, it's an important point, isn't it, that as we look at the public sector, after the past 3 decades, we've seen this dramatic decrease of union workers in the private sector to where now we actually have more unionized workers in the public sector.
Yes, that's correct. The percentage of unionized public workers is greater than in the private sector. And the laws in the public sector outside of the South and the Southwest have generally, in the public sector, have generally made it easier to form public sector unions. And then in the federal sector, of course, after 1961, it became easier to form and join unions. And there's very little that I can add to what Mark laid out, except that the level of hypocrisy that we're dealing with these Republicans is almost embarrassing. I mean, these are the same people that were in favor of furthering the Bush tax cuts for the rich, despite the impact that that had and will have on the deficit. So what they are deciding to do is to further the course that we've been under for quite a number of years of a greater and greater polarization of wealth.
Well, let me ask you this. When the state of labor today, and again, we have seen this declining. We've had you both on before to talk about the woes of the labor unions and the labor movement in this country. Could this be considered, as we see it now, go to the public sector, labor's last stand, Bill Fletcher?
This needs to be our Stalingrad, our El Alamein, or our Midway. That's what it needs to be. This needs to be the point where we destabilize the offensive that's going against workers. And that's going to mean, as Mark was saying, no more business as usual. The question is whether or not the leadership is really, in fact, up to the challenge. Because, you see, the thing is, Mitch, it's not enough for people to run around like chickens with their heads cut off and crying about the sky is falling. That really doesn't help very much. The question is, what is our strategy? Because you can be on the defensive and still flip the script. The problem is when people are into the sky is falling, and they're not offering a very clear counter strategy, then what happens in the ranks is that people become very demoralized. So this is a moment that calls for more than good speeches, but calls for a different approach to organizing and mobilization.
Well, this is a story from the Wall Street Journal, which has been covering labor efforts to counterbalance some of these attacks in different states. And let me read a couple of graphs. Quote, the effort is being coordinated by the AFL-CIO along with other large unions, including the politically powerful Service Employees International Union and the National Education Association. The 2.2 million member SEIU, which represents about 1 million public employees, is also planning on its own a strategy to counter the Tea Party movement and push the argument that labor unions and the federal government should be viewed as part of the solution to the nation's economic problems. An internal SEIU memo obtained by the Associated Press says that the goal is to focus on 10 to 15 major cities where unions can bring massive resources to bear. The campaign would build to a peak in the summer of 2012 as the presidential election season goes into full swing. And earlier in this article, which I didn't mention, is that AFL-CIO and the other, such as SEIU or unions, are also spending money and trying to defeat some of these proposals that we talked about previously. Mark Brenner with Labor Notes, can you talk about more about what the unions are doing?
Well, I think, you know, what you're alluding to is sort of the beginnings of a plan to actually do things different. And I think that, it's encouraging to see folks start to think, big. What the SEIU, strategy represents, that's one of the ones that I know the most about just because I've, been talking with some of the locals that are engaged in it, is to sort of launch campaigns in 6 states, and, you know, 10 to 15 major cities, as you mentioned, to really, as Bill put it, to flip the script, to really try to take this question that we're facing and turn it on its head and say, you know, what is it that we as a country deserve? What is it that we as a state or as a city deserve? Because it's not. I mean, we live in the richest country, and I here in New York City live in the richest city in the history of humanity. And so it's not a question of whether we can afford to have affordable mass transit or health care for everyone, affordable housing, clean environment. Those things are all obtainable. The question is, do we have the political will to actually go out and get them? And I think that what these plans represent is an effort to try to build the political block that would be necessary to win that fight. The labor movement's very clear. This isn't something that we're going to be able to do on our own. I think everyone is thinking about how we can line up, teachers shoulder to shoulder with parents and students, healthcare workers right there with their patients, and people that work with folks with long-term disabilities right there with their consumers and clients, because this is this is really the them versus us kind of moment. The bankers and the real estate moguls don't really care about the welfare of working class New York or the rest of the working class in the country. So I think that the trouble is that it's going to be hard to break out of old habits, and I think that that we're going to lean a lot on PR and inside game politics.
And electoral politics.
Absolutely.
And that's what it sounded like.
Saw this memo really pointing towards a strategy that synchronizes with elections. And for better or for worse, that's a necessary thing for public sector unions to be doing. But I think that we've leaned way too long and too hard on relations with politicians, and we've actually been far too afraid of the public. And I think it's hurt us. I mean, the reason why people are, so resentful of public sector workers now is because for a long time we've really been afraid to take our case to the public and talk about why what we do is so important. I come out of the public sector, and I can tell you my union was terrified of being in the spotlight and talking about why, I was in the teachers union in Massachusetts, why we did what we did and why we were worth all the spending that the state was putting up for K-12 education. And I think that's a huge mistake, because I think people value the things that the government does. But we can't just talk about the value of our work. We also have to talk about where's the money going to come from. And so that really means touching that taboo topic of taxes. And so I think if we can do those two things, and we see the sort of rumblings of that happening,
are we seeing the rumblings of that happening?
Well, I think that the trouble is union leaders at the local level out in the field really, just like the rest of us, tend to look up for solutions. What's going to happen in headquarters? What's happening in Congress? And I think that we're starting to see people, in a situation where they can't wait for leadership from their national officials or from headquarters or much less from the politicians in the State House or in Congress, and are starting to do things. I mean, we're seeing teachers fighting charter schools and fighting school closings. We're seeing, public sector workers in California and in other states really see this as an all-hands-on-deck moment to make the case for what they're doing. I think that all these kinds of things, the official plans you're talking about, the sort of one-off activities of an individual local and an individual state are all going to kind of come together to bring this, hopefully, to a boil. But I just don't know if we actually have the troops ready. So we, hand-in-hand with, taking our case to the public, we need to be doing a lot of internal education and sort of getting our members out there, because that's the thing that makes us different, than the rest of the people talking out in the world, is that we're actually we've got bodies and they've got money.
Bill Fetcher, what do you see occurring in the next few months, 6 months, even over the next year?
I think there's going to be a combination of things. I think that there's going to be in some unions sort of a scurrying around. I think some are going to try to cut their own deals with the attackers. And then others are going to try innovative strategies. So I think what you are identifying about SEIU, I know that, AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, is gearing up, a number of unions gearing up. So I think that there's going to be an attempt at innovative strategies. The question, part of the question that I'm wondering is whether we will really push the envelope. For example, are we really going to take on the issue of taxes? And are we going to take on, for example, in education, the question of how public education is funded? And whether or not, as Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. has raised, it should be a constitutional right as opposed to a matter that's handled simply in states and locales. See, I think that it's not just about us saying, get your boot off of our neck. It's about saying, get your boots, plural, off of the necks of working people. And the, so the attacks of the, against the unions have to be understood as not simply about removing an institution or a set of institutions. It's really about raping workers.
Bill Fletcher and Mark Brenner have been our guests. Bill Fletcher is with the American Federation of Government Employees, also editorial board member and columnist for BlackCommentator.com, author of the book Solidarity Divided, The Crisis in Organized Labor and New Path Towards Social Justice. And Mark Brenner is director of Labor Notes, which is a news website that covers labor issues. You could check it out at labornotes.org. Mark Brenner, Bill Fletcher, thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.